you want a vision of the future, Winston, imagine a boot stamping on a human face forever.
You want answers?
I think I'm entitled.
You want answers?
I want the truth! You can't handle the truth!
Someone is trying to teach me a lesson in futility. Why am I the only one who isn't killed?
They will run you dizzy. They will pile falsehood on top of falsehood until you can't tell a lie from the truth and you won't even want to. That's how the powerful keep their power. Don't you read the papers?
The world is a college of corporations, inexorably determined by the immutable bylaws of business. The world is a business, Mr. Beale. It has been since man crawled out of the slime.
Welcome back to another episode of Our Interesting Times. It's my pleasure to have David Wimhoff back on the show. He returns to discuss a couple of articles he recently posted. War Works, The Current Civil War as Necessity, and follow-up piece, The Most Important Issue of Our Time, Election 2020, as a Stark Reminder. David is a lawyer practicing in South Bend, Indiana, and the author of John Courtney Murray, Time Life and the American Proposition, How the CIA's Doctrinal Warfare Changed the Catholic Church. His website is The American Proposition. Dave, how are you doing this evening?
I'm okay. Thanks, Tim.
Well, thanks for coming back on the show.
Well, thanks for having me.
Well, you penned a couple of these pieces, and one was before the election, one was after the election. And, of course, we kind of saw the election debacle, the controversy, taking shape before the election. What we're seeing now was foreseen. amazingly, by groups like the Transition Integrity Project, of course, with the pandemic and the hysteria and the so-called containment measures, one of these measures was changing the election laws, both unconstitutionally with mail-in balloting. I think there are 30 times more mail-in ballots this election time, and this contributed much to the election controversy we're seeing now with mail-in voting. Ballot harvesting, ballot carrying, and these things. And now we have this disputed election. But nevertheless, Joe Biden was ordained or coordinated president-elect just a few days after the election, when miraculously those four swing states swung in his favor in the early morning hours of November 5th or 4th, rather. And now, but then there was disputed, and we've had these court rangs. The Supreme Court recently. Throughout the Texas lawsuit, there was a lawsuit that was joined by as many as 19 other states challenging the constitutionality of those elections in those states, Pennsylvania, I think it was Pennsylvania, Michigan, Georgia, and Wisconsin. That was turned down for lack of standing, but it continues because we just had the Electoral College vote. As many as seven states appointed competing electors, and that sets up for a very interesting situation come January 6th. Depending on how these court cases transpire, and perhaps some other developments in the case, but I'll let you go from there. Where do you think we stand now?
Well, the latest viewpoint, there's actually two that you're probably aware of, and that your listeners are aware of, and you know, we're probably not saying a whole lot of things new tonight. But the two things that everyone's talking about are, number one, this executive order that President Trump signed back in September of 2018, in which there is to be an investigation of every election. And if it is found that there has been some form of foreign influence to affect the election, then he can take certain actions to include freezing assets and stopping transactions of the bad actors. The second scenario that has just recently emerged in just the last couple of days is something that involves Article 2 of the Constitution and the 12th Amendment. And how it goes is like this. Yesterday, December 14th, there were seven states that had alternate sets of electoral ballots that were cast for Trump. I think it was Nevada, Arizona, Pennsylvania, Wisconsin, Michigan, Georgia, and I think there's one other. But
Nevada.
Oh, yeah, Nevada. So it would be those seven states would have put together their slate of electors for Trump. And despite the fact that the Secretary of States of those states certified the election results for Biden, and all this is now being shipped off to Washington, D.C. And according to the Constitution on January 6th, these packets containing the electoral votes are opened by the vice president in a joint session of Congress, and there they are counted. According to the Constitution, and that includes Article 12, I mean the 12th Amendment, rather, those votes are counted, and what is determined is who has the most votes. If somebody doesn't have the most votes, or as originally written, if two candidates had more than the required votes, then it goes to the House of Representatives. So what you got to have ostensibly, as what people are saying, is that there's going to be a fight on the floor of the Congress in January 6th, and that it's going to be the House of Representatives that will determine the president. Now, each state in the House of Representatives gets one vote under Article 12, I mean, under the 12th Amendment and under Article 2. Each gets one vote to determine the election of the president if there's a dispute as far as how many electoral votes have been cast for each of the two major candidates. Now, how each of the states resolve that, there's a question of some disagreement there on that point. Some people say it's the majority of the delegation that's in the House. So, like, I don't know. I mean, California's obviously Democrat. So let's say you take Michigan. They got 16 representatives in the House of Representatives. I believe that they have nine of them are Democrat. Then it's going to be 9-7. Obviously, they're going to vote, and they're going to vote for Biden. Obviously, you know, Michigan's for Biden. So another way to count it is to take a look at the legislatures of the states and see how they direct the casting of the electoral ballots from the Electoral College. And so no matter how you cut it, the Republicans have an edge in the House of Representatives. Whether it's 26-24 or it's 30-20. So the scenario then is that Trump would win in the House of Representatives.
Yeah.
On a disputed election there.
Mm-hmm. And that would be purely a perfectly constitutional, legal, no problem.
Well, it might be, but I mean, what is going to be the realistic impact in this country if that happens? I mean, do you think that the Democrats and their powerful international backers are going to accept that?
Well, I think if you point to them the rule of law and how the rules work and how they should work, they'll respect that because they're men of good honor, men and women of honor. And no, obviously not. No.
I have a bridge somewhere I want to sell you.
if they believed in following the rules, we wouldn't be in this mess. But yeah.
I think that there would be a very, very strong backlash, and I think a lot of people know that. And what has definitely come out since June of this year, June to, I guess, October when the riot stopped, is that there is an organization in place on the ground level. And there are people at the lowest levels who are in elected office who have got some sort of respect for, loyalty to these international forces.
Yeah, these are the Soros-backed attorney generals and mayors.
Yeah.
And, yeah, the down-ballot camps that they've been funding for several years now with not very much publicity. Yeah.
No, that's exactly right. They've been doing it for quite a while. The Open Society Foundation, and I'm sure your listeners are all aware of all these groups, but they've been out there for quite a while. And that's ultimately, what they are looking to do. I mean, they're not going to take this lying down. They want Biden in there, obviously, because he favors the international interests. He favors international capitalism, so that's why they want him.
That's why you had that state representative Johnson or something in Michigan making that threat on social media to she felt comfortable doing that because they understand that some powerful interests have their back. And that's some people suggest that's why I think there's a case we made, it's why the Supreme Court punted it with the Texas case where they ruled lack of standing and they're afraid of the implications of what would happen if they did, rule in favor of Texas and remand back to the states where the legislatures would be forced to decide. All that is legal, and although strong case could be made that all these violations did constitute an illegitimate election in these four states, yet they punted because of pressure.
Well, you can't lose sight of the fact that Senator Schumer made what amounted to a threat that was rebuked by the Chief Justice last year, and it had to deal with, of course, abortion rights. So there is pressure on the Supreme Court. There's no doubt about that, and there are very strong forces at odds in this society. But the political system, we're supposed to agree on that, and it's supposed to be fair. And what the political system in America is supposed to do is to diffuse all of this really emotional energy into a process that we can all find agreeable and acceptable and fair, and then we'll all abide by that result, because after all, the idea is the will of the people triumphs.
Yes. But apparently, at least the powers that be, the ruling elite, are a hostile elite who see nothing in common with the broad American public, particularly the heritage America. And you touched on that in your article, is that this it may break down on ethno-religious lines, as these things often do. Things get primal, I guess you could say. And the idea of America and its creed as a nation, freedom of speech, Bill of Rights, these things are not binding us together anymore. As apparently, as the oligarchic, the interest, the powerful interest, while they used to feel compelled to give these things at least lip service, we don't see that anymore. There's open talk about suppression of free speech, cancel culture, using social media to shut down debate. YouTube now considers hate speech questioning the election results.
Yeah, how about that? And every
So
time you
what about
discuss the
that?
election, there's a little
Yes.
thing up there. Now they're going to say Joe Biden is president-elect. And so what they're doing is they're eating a little bit of humble pie, because you're technically not president-elect till the Electoral College meets at the earliest December 14th, and for sure January 6th. So what you're seeing, I feel some vindication, because and what you're talking about also gives me a little bit of vindication, because on the evening of Thanksgiving, November 26th of this year, at about 6:50, 6:49 p.m. on Newsmax, Sean Spicer, the former secretary of the press for Donald Trump, was being asked a number of questions. And one of the callers called in and said, "How is it, Mr. Spicer, that guys like George Soros and others like them," and I'm paraphrasing, but the caller used George Soros' name, "how is it that these rich and powerful interests are able to hurt us here in America? How is it they're allowed to do that with these riots and with these protests and with everything else they're doing?" His answer was short and to the point, and it was one phrase, and he said, "Because of the First Amendment." That's what he said.
Yes, yeah. And that would
So
be,
what the
go ahead.
First Amendment does, now he may have a little different view than I do, but I think that actually we are in agreement. The First Amendment allows people to petition the government for redress of grievances. Okay, so what is that really? that's really a check on the power of government. Okay, if you can put enough people out in the street who are obviously well financed and supported, then you know, you as the government just got to sit there and stand back and take it on the chin, even if that's a minority of the population. How about a free press? Okay, and free speech. Again, government can't step in and say, you know what, you're doing something seditious here. Now, the press can say filing a lawsuit is seditious, which is ridiculous, absolutely ridiculous. The press has said that about the Texas lawsuit that was thrown out, saying that this was a seditious attempt to overthrow the government, which is ridiculous. Everyone has access to the courts in the United States. Always has been, always will be. And the issues that were raised in that complaint, I read that complaint, were very well thought out. And I thought had some teeth, and so did other people that I know. But that was thrown out. So the press is free. It's owned by six families. It's gotten more concentrated over time. The government can't do anything about it. The press not only can wail on the government like it did for 4 years against Donald Trump, and then have the temerity to say he should concede because he lost, have the temerity to call the election on November 7th. When you have a huge bullhorn like that, the government is weakened. So the powerful private interests who control that bullhorn are strengthened, and they're able to provide the cover for the rioters and protesters who just burned down Kenosha. And they're able to say, well, these are peaceful protests. They're telling you black is white and white is black. And the result is that people then are faced with a situation where they feel isolated and they feel outnumbered, and when they're actually the majority and a lot of people think like them. So you got peaceful protests and you got this free press and free speech, which is in the hands of about six people, and they're able to beat up on the government. Now, it's more than that, because in the First Amendment, you also have the Establishment Clause and the Free Exercise Clause. Well, the Free Exercise Clause is a bone that you throw to the churches to keep them in the program. Okay, so you're not gonna shut down their churches. But and the same thing kind of with the Establishment Clause. Only if you don't have an established church, if you don't have a recognized religion, that is the Catholic religion in society, what you do is you take away a very, very powerful check on the powers of the powerful private interests. You take away a very powerful social and moral check on their appetites, on what they want to do or can't do. Now, in the Middle Ages, you had this check in place on the elites. Okay, and they had a specific view of society. I get that. But they also had a check on their power. Now, many of them acted against that, but against the church and whatever the bishop said, or they co-opted the church and the bishops. But the church is an international, well-funded, well-organized operation. It still is today. But right now, the issue is, who are they serving? Are they serving Christ, or are they serving Davos? And it looks like they're serving Davos.
Indeed. The Holy See has entered into an arrangement with these financial interests.
I just read today, somebody sent me a tweet from Pontifex, which is Francis. I mean, I don't know, maybe it wasn't Francis, because I don't know if we know if we ever figured out who sent who liked the Brazilian bombshells. So maybe it wasn't Francis, but maybe it was somebody. But anyway, it came from the Pope's private account, and basically said, we got to go along with negative or with zero net carbon emissions. Well, I mean, that's destroying Western society, is what that is. That's taking us back to the Stone Age.
It's poverty, essentially. Yeah,
it's impoverishing, right? Or eliminating the population.
Yeah, it's the population control. Yes, yeah.
That's right. So he's signed on to Davos. He's signed on to climate control, all that stuff.
And of course, the biggest driver of disease is poverty.
Right.
You know, so much for containment measures and public health, right? You know.
That's right. So Sean Spicer is recognizing that the powerful private interests have used the First Amendment to hurt the people in the United States, to hurt the American people. And at the same time, you know, to try to check Trump's power. So this, you know, and on top of all this, the media is there because they control, they got, you know, free press and free speech. They tell you what to believe. They tell you what the values in society are. They communicate, but most importantly, they communicate to the day-to-day people like you and me, our friends and colleagues. They communicate to us what's acceptable and what isn't. And their voice is more credible than anything that comes from the pulpit of any church. And so people know that if they got to get along, they got to go with the narrative. They've got to accept the narrative. Tell me something, Tim. Did Neil Armstrong land on the moon?
He must have, because they had that big parade for him.
Okay. But were you on the moon when he landed there?
No,
you had to believe what someone else said. Okay. So, okay. Yeah, that makes sense. Okay. There are photos. Yeah. We can't explain that away. So it's really an epistemological issue again.
Yes.
When you go down to the issue, you got all these people just going with the mainstream media. They can't prove or disprove it. They don't have time to read the complaints and look at the videos. We're talking about thousands upon thousands of pieces of paper, a lot of it, which is very technical. So they got to rely on someone else. And they're going to rely on the biggest voice, the most popular voice, the one that gets the widest acceptance. And this is a normal human reaction. You're going to do that because you want to survive. You're not a bad person. The little people aren't the problem. Our neighbors and friends who hold different views from us, they're not the problem. It's the guys who control the means of shaping beliefs and ideas. It's the leadership. It's the 700 billionaires in this country. It's the billies, as we call them. The billies. They're the ones who are the leadership of this society. They're outside of government. They tell you what to believe. They tell you what's acceptable, what isn't.
Yes, it's a very important point. We have, theoretically, the First Amendment and the so-called Fourth Estate that stands outside, you know, the government and holds people honest. And this relies on the idea that there are a multiplicity of newspapers representing a multiplicity of interests and values. At one time that might have obtained, it doesn't anymore. It's been highly concentrated. The internet in the past 20 years kind of broke that monopoly for a little while, but they're rapidly trying to get that back now, clawing that back, the censorship. But the media, the mainstream media, the corporate media, it's not there to, as you say, get all this complex information, distill it down into a package that the common man can digest and therefore have an informed opinion to vote and also conduct his affairs. It's there to manipulate, it's mind control, it is psychological warfare. Mass media was always designed as psychological warfare. Read Christopher Simpson's book, The Science of Coercion. And you understand that, how the study of mass communication, radio, television, funded by the War Department, the Defense Department, and the CIA. But the media is there to create narratives for the public that support the narrow interest of a handful of billionaires that own these corporations. And therefore, what good is our First Amendment if that is indeed the case? And these are now organs of propaganda for malevolent billionaires that are trying to encourage us to keep supporting a system that is harming us. And that's the problem.
Well, I think there's some truth in that. If you're a Catholic, you have to believe that the system is there to protect the people. It's all laid out in the Catechism, sections 1907 through 1909 talk about the common good. And one of the bases of the common good is peace and security. Mm-hmm. This is something that the ancients talked about, Nicomachean ethics that was talked about. It's part of the natural law. This is what St. Thomas Aquinas said of the first precepts. You have the right to procreate, to educate, to live in society, self-defense, and to worship God. Well, all this has to work to the benefit of the other. It can't be used to put people at odds, to cause problems in society, to cause a lack of virtue, because when you have a lack of virtue, as the Catholic doctrine has taught, and as is the purpose of the Catholic state, when you have a lack of virtue, you have everything else decline. You have procreation go down, you have the family break up, you have education go down. Everything falls apart. And that is what Catholic doctrine has taught for years. I mean, the leadership of the church no longer teaches it. They basically go with the powerful private interest. So you have Sean Spicer saying here that you got a fundamental law of the land. that hurts the people. That goes against Catholic doctrine, but also the wisdom of the ancients and also the natural law. So you do have this conflict is becoming very clear here in this election. What you're also having too is like the Fourth Estate, like you said, is obviously being shown to be an honest broker. They're obviously biased. So who believes in them anymore? In a society like America, the founders saw America having many divergent and conflicting interests. So there's always this state of war, always a state of civil war in America. It's always there. Okay, but what happens is it gets sublimated by virtue of the political process, which is there supposed to be fair. Okay, we all agree on the rules, supposed to be fair, and then we'll abide by that decision because we all played fair. Well, when you've got 77 to 80% of Republicans saying this election was not fair, when you got 30 to 33% of Democrats saying this election was not fair, you've got a real perception problem now. And so you're in a situation where the big mediator, the electoral system, is starting to lose legitimacy itself. Now, one of two things is going to happen. Either people are going to drop out of the system, which is something that, you know, the billies like. They want people to drop out because then it's easier for them to control it. Or people are going to get more energized in the system, thereby keeping the system going. What's really sad is that Catholicism offers another view to the organization of society, and no one is announcing that. No one is discussing that. No one is presenting that. And now is the time really to start talking about that with this situation that we see. But of course, no one wants to discuss that or talk about that.
That's the promises of liberalism we have freedom from fear, freedom from want, freedom of religion. And we've learned these are empty promises because the power elite, those who control things, when they want to divide and conquer, they scare us. We really don't have freedom of speech if you're in a position where your speech actually matters. You will be shut down. You'll be deplatformed if your speech is inconvenient to those who matter in our society. That goes way back. I mean, even before... I mean, look what happened to Charles Lindbergh and Father Coughlin.
Right.
You know, freedom of speech didn't apply to them. and, of course, freedom from want, well, you know, what are they doing with the economy? And what are they doing, you know, with their, periodic recessions that they can't bring about and depressions? Look what they're doing with the overall economy now. Is they're not providing for that. And so, again, we're supposed to believe in the rule of law, the Bill of Rights, the Constitution, these paper parchment guarantees. But when it comes down to it, those with the power don't have to abide by those rules. And they deny us these rights when it suits their interest or when they perceive that us exercising these rights get in the way of their agenda. And so it really, at the end of the day, liberalism is an empty promise. It is a cover for oligarchy because it is successful in atomizing society, denying people, sort of an ethno-religious identity that they can coalesce and organize under. Rather, they become atomized consumers who have nothing but the false promises of liberalism. And there's nothing really to act upon at that point. They have no basis.
When you don't have a state church, when you don't have the Catholic Church as a state church and as the state religion, what you have is you have a lack of common values. Mm-hmm. And so I guess the common value you can say now is materialism, and you follow the powerful. When everybody has rights and everybody's equal, the guy with more things is more equal. Okay, more things means more money, more access, more influence. They're going to have more influence than you. Yeah, I mean, we got freedom of speech. Sure, you can go stand on the street corner and talk. Who's going to listen to you?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
But I mean, when you got, 50 million people listen to you because you got all the networks, well, you got a real strong voice there. You got freedom of speech, too. The government can't do anything about it. But the situation is not a good one. And it's one where you're seeing more and more calls to silence people for speaking out. I mean, there are calls now to sanction the lawyers who represented Trump and others in contesting the election practices and results in these various states. This is unheard of. You've got mm-hmm. you've got the mainstream. This is Soviet Union stuff. You've got the mainstream media saying a sedition for a state and 17 others to file a suit, and now you got the chairman of the Texas Party, Colonel West, saying, you know, us 18 states, we need to get together and form our own bloc. I mean, you know, you're really setting up a situation here where it's going to get very dangerous and it's going to get very unpleasant. Now, the reality is that the billionaires are not going to want that to happen, because if you have political instability in a society, okay, if you have political instability in a society, that's going to hurt you financially. It's going to hurt your financial markets. It's going to hurt your bond ratings of the country. So they got to keep a lid on that. Okay, so they got to be really careful in what they do. And they work in many very sophisticated means. And one way they work to control people is by keeping their eye off the ball, which is what's actually going on. You're living in liberalism to begin with is a system that benefits those who have more. It benefits really, you know, the assertive, the aggressive, the entrepreneur, the guys who are willing to take chances. I think in many ways, liberalism as a system of social organization, yes, you're right, does atomize society, and it does not build friendship among the members of society, which is the fundamental basis for having any sort of society. And in their book, Father Thomas Crean and Dr. Alan Feimester, their book on integralism, it just came out. It's a very good read. I'm still working on it. They talk about this idea of friendship, wanting the best for everyone in the society. Well, I don't think liberalism necessarily builds that. It builds an individualism that isn't very good. Despite liberalism, you had in America develop, I believe, an ethic idea and an ethic identity of the American. And that was the person of European American descent, fundamentally. And it was based on a culture that was fundamentally English, Scottish, somewhat Northern European. Everybody brought in a little bit. And that's what you had. It was recognized by Pope Leo in his encyclicals. He recognized that you had a unique res publica over here, unique state, and you had a unique ingenuum or a unique American character. This was in the 1880s, 1890s. So he understood there was a people that was forming here as a result of the obstacles they encountered, their beliefs, their similarities, and so on and so forth in their culture. So that is an identity that is gradually being attacked. I just talked to a real good friend of mine today. I mean, she was just in tears. She's going through this sensitivity training at in this one organization that goes by the name of Roman Catholic. And it's a big religious organization that's around the world. And they're going through this sensitivity training and they're being told that white people are haters and they've got built-in biases. And, you know, you've got the destruction of this identity through this training, and the Catholic Church is facilitating it. And if anything that the Catholic Church should be doing, it should be building up, you know, ethnic identities and purifying them with the moral law.
Yeah, it's critical race theory that's been implemented. It started out with stuff started like in the 90s. I remember going through some of that. Relatively mild from what stuff that I'm hearing now.
It's horrible now.
It's an assault. And of course, we saw the sort of struggle session that we were forced to go through, courtesy of the mainstream media, late spring and summer with Black Lives Matter and all that nonsense. Of course, there's a purpose for it. Black Lives Matter is a proxy for these oligarchs. Same with Antifa. But it is. There's a general assault on heritage America. That's why you had the iconoclasm with the statues destroying history. Cleveland Indians are now changing their name. I don't know.
Isn't that something?
Why Indian is offensive? I don't know who's in a position to make that claim and why. But Major League Baseball, again, is part of this corporate structure. It's professional sports in general is playing a big part in this entire psychological operation that's being done to destroy America. They're being paid off to do it.
That's right. Yeah. And they're virtue signaling is what they're doing. All the big guys – Zuckerberg, Bezos, Cook, who was the guy over in Alphabet, can't think of his name, and a couple of others at the beginning of June. They were all virtue signaling. This is what you got to believe. Well, what this is the destruction of ethnicities. This is follow on from what, as you know, Soros said at Davos in January of 2020. We're going to destroy ethnicities. We're going to destroy them. We're going to remake society as we want. They build them up, they take you down. Well, that's not good for people.
No, it's not. No. But they're all about leveraging humanity, treating it like arbitrage. And they can start a civil war somewhere, destabilize another area, then in a few in 10, 20 years, use the victims of that civil war or destabilization as surplus labor that they can use to build a cheap factory and then employ that. Then they can take the jobs out of the Europe or the United States, where they have to pay higher wages because there's greater ethnicity and organization, and they can exploit that. That's what the whole model is about. That's what globalism is about. Equalizing everything, equalization of wages, without any consideration for the unique culture, that exists in these various areas. Moving humanity around. That's why you have immigration programs are designed for that now, to disrupt the demographics of the country, which is warfare. Demographic warfare is a strategy of destabilization that's been admitted as such. But this started in the United States, 1965, Hart-Celler Act. And of course, when they signed that law, they promised this would not change the demographic makeup of the country, meaning that people back then realized that demographic changes would portend political and culture changes, not to the benefit of the host population. Now, if you bring that up consideration, you're called a racist. Despite the fact that when they passed that law, they said that it wouldn't change the demographic makeup of the country. Now they brag about the demographic makeup of the country, the so-called Browning of America, and what it means. It means we no longer will respect the Second Amendment or the Bill of Rights. Or what you're saying is that America becomes less white, the Constitution becomes less supported. Well, what you're saying is, if I support the Constitution, then I have to reverse that demographic reverse that trend. But then if I try to do that in terms of policy, I'm called a racist. Talk about, gaslighting.
I totally understand what you're saying. And what's really sad is you had Francis in his latest document, and what was it, Tutti Frutelli, I call it Tutti Frutti, Tutti Frutelli Tutti, in his latest document, you had this guy make this statement that to the effect that, yes, it is self-defense for a society to want to limit immigration, and it's normal and natural. But put those urges aside and let the immigrant in and change your society.
Yeah.
So he's giving over he's given over to Catholic societies of Europe to be destroyed. Now, what's interesting is just this last weekend, as you probably know, there was pushback from Hungary and from Poland, and they wanted relief from the EU to deal with the COVID-19 pandemic. And they got Merkel to agree not to insist on quote unquote rule of law in those two countries until they got after they got the relief package. So in those two countries, you got leadership that are very much in tune with the ethnic identity of their people. And so they're either ignored or they're marginalized or they're attacked. Or like in Poland, you got women marching for abortion and gay rights, which, of course, is against Catholic doctrine. And of course, the Pope says nothing. The guy who calls himself Pope says nothing about it all. He doesn't come to their defense. He just lets them to their own devices in Poland and Hungary.
Yeah, that's all part of globalism, is spreading degeneracy to demoralize the host population, and under the guise of liberalism or democracy and open society, if you will, right? That's all about that.
Yeah,
open
society, that's right.
You have gay rights marches and these things. The minute you bring in – that's why Putin kicked out some of these NGOs, and you saw that in the Ukraine too, about 7, 8 years ago. Promoting that sort of degeneracy, and it's been so effective here in the West, in the United States, of course. You hear the Supreme Court, who doesn't want to be politicized by involving itself in an election, but they have no problem, creating a right to abortion or redefining marriage.
Well, they've what's happened is these billies, the billionaires have basically decided what the values are, and because the fundamental laws of the United States are not based on and cannot admit of any basis in any sort of theological basis, especially if you look at Lawrence versus Texas, the case from 2003, then you're going to get everything's going to be redefined. That means the billies have got complete and absolute run of the field,
Yeah, and that was
and
all
you have
part of
the
the
church in a reactive mode. I'm sorry.
yeah, in Casey in the Casey decision in 1992, where you have the mystery clause where the right essential idea of liberty is the right to define the meaning of life in the universe or something to that effect. I was like, what? Where is that in the law? And that was Justice Kennedy, right? Another conservative appointment to the Supreme Court.
Yeah, we can really trust those conservative appointments. I'm sure Donald Trump is glad he appointed three people this term.
Yeah, they
This,
abandoned them. Yeah.
yeah, yeah. They just they, well, you can't trust the Supreme Court. So what you got is, I mean, if you're a conservative, you can't trust them to do the right thing. So what you got is a situation where you've got this American system of social organization. The First Amendment is in high relief. It is now, as Sean Spicer says, being used to attack the very people it's supposed to protect. Well, hey, guess what? There's another way to organize society. It's called the confessional state that actually protects the people, with the fundamental laws and helps them grow and improve, lead virtuous lives, attain their end, have families, be happy, and so on and so forth. So now we really do have a moment of opportunity. I think what's going to happen is there are an increasingly number of Catholic intellectuals who are starting to come to integralism, as Father Crean and Dr. Feimester have talked about, and as the Josiahs are talking about. They're starting to see this idea that we need to really have a basis for the laws. And some other college professors are involved in that, like Patrick Deneen at Notre Dame. You get some writers like Sohrab Armari, who writes about it from once in a while. And you're starting to see, this idea that, no matter what we do, this thing just doesn't turn out right. We need to change the way we're doing business here because everything we've been told is simply not true, and it certainly does not comport with what's best for people.
So the seduction of Catholics with Americanism has been, I guess, going back, well, perhaps its founding, but at least let's say the late 19th century, the charm's wearing off. We realized many Catholics realize they're being used and misled, and they need to reevaluate the whole experiment, American experiment.
I think that the Catholic thinkers are starting to the conscientious ones are coming to that conclusion. I think that they're starting to see this thing is not what it professed to be. It's not delivering the goods. Now, to rank and file Catholics, and you go to church, and half the church is red, half is blue. I mean, it's just a reflection of society. The priests and the bishops aren't going to do anything to change that. They have no courage. They have no vision. They know better, but they just simply don't want. They're not interested in being martyrs. They're not interested in standing up for the truth. Maybe because they all have skeletons in their closet, or maybe because they're going to lose funding, or maybe because they think they can tame this beast. They just need to stand up and talk about how society should be ordered, because there are people sitting in those pews who have been hurt by this society, who have been hurt by pornography, which is protected free speech. There are people sitting in these pews who have been hurt by really, the effective indifferentism that is taught by the Constitution, who spent years wandering, by people who in the pews have been hurt by the mainstream media and the powerful forces behind it that have told us how to redefine the relationship between men and women so that everything is up in the air. There are people, you don't know even what to look for in a woman. You don't know who's in charge in a family. So you got all that chaos, all that family chaos. There are a lot of people who have been hurt by that. And it's because of what Sean Spicer said. The First Amendment has been used to hurt the American people. That's why. And the American people are good people, and they need to have the best for them. And that's why the Catholic confessional state is the best. And that is why it is doable. And we can do that. We can do it. But we have to at least start somewhere.
Yeah. And it was the primary form of government for what? For many countries for the better part of two millennia, you know, 1500
yeah, exactly,
years.
Exactly right. Yeah, no, that's exactly right.
You know, this idea of this is a very relatively new idea, you know, 250 years maybe. And then it is an Enlightenment idea ultimately. And the Enlightenment project itself is, the more you look into it, the more suspect it becomes.
It is suspect.
Yeah.
It's there. I mean, once you get to the Enlightenment without God, I mean, what you're talking about is you're talking about being able to manipulate everything, and you know, things are going to be manipulated for power and money. Okay.
Well, it's Luciferian.
Right. And they're going to turn against God, and they're going to try to destroy His creation. They can't kill Him, so they're going to destroy His creation. But there's always going to be somebody who's going to be able to benefit from this, who's smarter, who's tougher, who's got better connections. They're going to be able to benefit, and they won't have any bonds of unity with the rest of us. They won't have that solidarity. And liberalism does not encourage solidarity. In spite of liberalism, you've had a sense of ethnic identity grow up in America, you know, where you had John Wayne was the example of the man, you know. I remember John Wayne. A lot of kids don't remember him. I remember John Wayne. He was the man. That's how you're supposed to be. You're supposed to be honest and fair and be firm and treat the ladies right, and you're going to be fine.
And stoic.
But, you know, that's all gone.
Yeah.
You know, and do what you got to do. And so, you know, and fight the bad guys. But that's all gone.
If a system, Tucker Carlson said this a while back. I know he has his critics, but he did say that if a system, economic system, doesn't allow a young man and a young woman to get together and start a family and buy a house, then that system is not worth preserving.
I think there's a lot of merit in that. Yeah. I mean, that is right there an encapsulation of the first five precepts of Thomas Aquinas' natural law. Mm-hmm.
Because if that doesn't happen, if that initial union doesn't happen, society falls apart. No matter how much easy credit you provide, how much money you create, no matter how many relief checks you mail out,
right?
You know, no matter how much streaming services you offer, in fact, those are preventing that very thing from occurring because it's atomizing everybody. And look what they've done, you know, with the supposed containment measure with COVID is that, you know, they're literally telling people not to go to church. My governor has said, don't go to church. That's a tyrant. The motto of our state on our seal is Sic Semper Tyrannis. You know, and these governors and these autocratic little dictators, mayors, you know, should heed that warning because they're pushing it. They're really pushing it. Again, they're not allowing these things. They're not allowing that to happen. You're destroying society from the bottom up. You know, there's no growth.
Well, that's right. And when you allow what Tucker Carlson said for a young man, or young woman to get together and make a family and buy a house, when you allow that, you have a system, an overarching system that helps the family. And what I have argued in the past, I probably talked to you about on this show, is that you got to have the family has got to be protected, nurtured, and matched by a higher society. The higher society has got to be based on the natural law or on the Catholic catechism, you know, but they will then reflect each other and they will then grow and benefit each other. If you have a liberal society like we have right now, you're going to get the soup that you call family nowadays.
Yeah.
That's what you're going to get. You're going to get confusion. And the family today is a perfect reflection of liberal society where there's no authority. I mean, the authority is the rich and powerful guy, you know, the guy who wins, who's successful, you know, and once you pursue your private goals in any degree, there's a slight fraying of society and of social bonds.
Well, society descends into debt slavery, concubinage, and that's what America's slowly becoming. I mean, if that's because, you know, that's if you don't have monogamy and these things, this breaks, it descends into that. And that's what America's kind of becoming. If you look at it, it's becoming almost pre-modern in a sense. Society, it's going back to a much more brutal form of feudalism without the salve of Christianity.
We're returning to the state of nature, Tim.
Yes. Now, this is funny. Now, before
we're living in the state of nature that Rousseau talked about.
I'd like to get your remarks on the current situation, because right now we do have a system that is breaking down. And it's some people say it's rapidly going into perhaps a civil war because both sides, and you have a large large section of the population has no faith in the system anymore. And I think what we saw kind of reveal itself in the late spring and summer is sort of a color revolution, and governors and mayors abandoning their primary responsibility, which means promote public safety, and actually promoting disorder, agents of discord. And some of them have connected this back to sort of the Soros Network, Open Society Foundation, where their job has been to create the very disorder that we experienced. And that coupled with the COVID-19 restrictions and how it changed the election. And this is all part of that same color revolution to bring about a sort of a fraudulent election to unseat Donald Trump. Now, I think the stakes are much higher than that, but nevertheless, it appears that that's been carried out. Then you mentioned how some of the people who are now suggesting that those attorneys, officials, even elected officials who backed, like the Texas lawsuit or supported investigating the election fraud, that they should be investigated themselves. We had one congressman, I think from New Jersey, said that the members of the House of Representatives, I think number 109, which backed the Texas lawsuit, should not be seated in the following Congress. We had the Attorney General of Michigan, who's quite a piece of work, Nussel, who has threatened to go after state legislatures who supported the lawsuit. And this, of course, all this is legal, challenging the election in court, all that's legal. Nevertheless, you have they're signaling they have no regard for the rule of law. And they're signaling that once their side gets into power come January, that there's going to be a retribution, enemies list, and these things. This is almost like they've gotten control of the republic, and almost like in Spain in the 1930s, once they got control of the republic, they're going to impose a new order. Communists started immediately violating the laws. They actually formed Chechas in Spain, started slaughtering people, burning down churches, and you have this war in the church right now under the guise of COVID. Of course, in that situation, Spain, because of the communists who infiltrated the republic, under the name of the republic, they were imposing a communist tyranny. You had a man come in named one Franco, Francisco Franco, who went in, and he had a military behind him, he had experience, and he won the civil war in 3 years and reimposed order on Spain after a decade or so or decades of instability. And Spain did very well, despite Franco's critics. Between 1960 and 1975, income rose 900%. You had actually a population growth. But now, since Spain liberalized in the late 70s, now they're suffering rapid decline. And what good is an idea like liberalism if it literally results in the physical annihilation of your people through depopulation and demoralization? My question to you is, given the, I think, a prima facie case for election fraud, electoral fraud, at multiple levels, that could somebody may interpret that as sort of a coup to unseat a president. Is there a case to be made that the president could invoke in that executive order, go in and arrest the conspirators and sort of impose a order on the situation and deal with the conspirators and sort of root out the corruption? I know it'd be a Herculean task in the Augean stables to do that. I know it's fraught with all types of risks because martial law and these things, but is the situation such right now would such a measure be justified or called for, given that we're seen to be on the precipice of something rather dangerous?
Well, Donald Trump, the president, would have the information to make that call, because, as we may have mentioned before, this executive order from 2 years ago calls on a number of different agencies to collect information about any sort of interference in the election. So I assume that by now he's getting some sort of briefing. You have to understand the American legal system is kind of set up with a lot of laws in there that you can invoke if the basis exists for you to invoke them. For instance, all the trade laws that President Trump invoked 2.5-3 years ago to take action against the Chinese unfair trade practices were all well in place since the Cold War, since the late 1940s, the early 1960s. Nobody had used them. That's just it. But he invoked them. because of national security issues, which, you know, resonated with a lot of people and had some effectiveness, but it also ticked off the international capitalists, the financial capitalists, who really want to see barriers knocked down and their profits even bigger. So, yeah, I suppose that the laws are there and he can gather the evidence to do it. But the question is, you know, will he? You know, yes, I think that whether it's true or not, there is a perception that there was election fraud of such a degree that it made the entire election unfair. Okay. And that means that the political process is now suspect. You've got the media for years yelling at Trump taking one side. So right now the mainstream media looks suspect to a lot of people. You know, so you've got the whole health institution with this whole COVID situation, and the draconian lockdowns just completely leading to a lack of trust in the medical profession and the medical structure. So you have one institution after another in America that are starting to basically look suspect to a large portion of the population. And you're starting to see these essential freedoms in America that have been taken for granted, you know, fair play, we all get along, we're all part of the same group. That's fallen apart. So that's why you got AOC and Ilhan Omar and all these other people calling for punitive actions when people in Congress and elsewhere exercise their constitutional, legally protected rights to speak out and say things. So you're seeing a great deal of lack of faith in the institutions of America. Now, would Trump do something that would really cause a huge backlash? And you got to know that if he goes after these international interests, there will be a huge backlash because they have been organized in this country and they got sleeper cells and they're waiting. We saw that this past summer. They're waiting. They're there. They're going to come up again whenever they need to be summoned. They're going to be called and they're going to be given free rein by the political authorities. At least that's the view of some people. And so what you're dealing with is a situation where does he want to do that? America is the world leader. If you get there's always a certain amount of social stress and tension and political tension, political stress. But America still is the world leader. In the first Civil War, America was a backwater. Nobody really cared whether, you know, you had blue coats and gray coats shooting each other. But now, if you're going to get into a violent conflagration that escalates, because I think there is a low-level one that's going on now through any other means, if that escalates, it's going to have worldwide implications, and that's actually going to hurt the Billies. You're going to have trust in the United States decline. You're going to have the financial markets suffer. The bond ratings will suffer of the country, and there will be a huge backlash. So is Trump inclined to do it? Is he going to do something that's pretty gutsy to start rolling up the opposition? Is he going to do it? Well, maybe we have to wait and see, but my sense right now is that he will not, we will see.
Yeah. You end the piece, like, the reason why it made me think of Franco and the analogy is just, but before I go, let me ask you, did the Spanish people tolerate Republican government to destroy them and their religion? No. Catholics did not rise up in Spain in the 1930s, and it's not likely that they will sufficiently organize in America some 85 years later. The heavy lifting in Spain was done by those with a sense of nationhood, of kinship. This suggests that the heavy lifting in America will be done by those with a sense of nationhood, even though they be much maligned and are even now being targeted for destruction.
I think you're dealing, you know, with a problem in the Catholic Church, where the Catholic Church right now, the leadership are incapable of trying to articulate a better way to organize society or to mediate the dispute, the difficulties in society. They can't offer anything else. They just can't offer anything else. And so what you're going to do is you're going to see people with an idea of America. And I think Donald Trump has an idea of America. We're going to try to rise to the challenge. But we've seen they're being aligned and they're being targeted. And I think that a lot of organizations, you know, to include like NRA and the pro-life movement are kind of there to keep people in the experiment and not really change anything. They're just kind of there to make everybody feel a little bit better about what they're doing. So, yeah, you got people who are real patriots who really believe in their people and believe in America, but you know, they're being targeted and they're being attacked like never before. So will America repeat what happened in Spain? Nobody really cared about Spain in 1936, but everybody cares about America in 2020. So, you know, my sense is that things will stay pretty much the same, and the events of the election will be a great fundraising drive for a number of people.
What's that line? I forget who said it, but every mass movement becomes a racket and then big business. It turns into a big business.
Yeah. There you go.
Every mass movement turns into a racket and becomes big business.
and you keep stability in society. There you go.
Yeah. Yeah. So, yeah, it absorbs everyone's energy and gets them in, believes they have a stake in the game. A false sense of participation, which I think this blatant fraud might have shattered. So we'll see how that plays out. Well, David, I said I'd have you for less than an hour, and I got you for almost an hour. So there you go.
Thanks, Tim.
So I want to thank you for back on the show. I'll let you go. Listen, have a Merry Christmas, and we'll see how this turns out.
Okay, you too. Let's keep our hats on.
Take care. Bye-bye.